and welcome to Inside the Admissions Office, the official podcast of Ingenious Prep and your go-to resource for expert admissions strategy. My name is Noelle, and each episode, I'll bring you behind-the-scenes knowledge from former admissions officers about their firsthand experiences reviewing applications. Our strategies have helped countless students gain acceptance to top universities, and we're here to help your student gain that competitive edge and do the same. If you would like to set up a complimentary strategy call, simply follow the link in our episode description, and our expert team of enrollment counselors will work with you to create a personalized plan for admission into your student's dream school. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me for another exciting episode. And now that we're in mid-March, we're entering result season again. And I know a lot of our seniors are either starting to get their regular decision results or counting down the days to Ivy Day. So in honor of this exciting time, I wanted to bring on Kat, who's a former admissions officer from NYU. I work closely with one of our students who got into Columbia Early Decision this year. And she gave us an inside look into exactly what she did with her student Maggie to get her into Columbia, like this one.
She also spent a lot of time teaching herself guitar in her free time and drawing and things like that. And I think what a lot of students don't realize is that those are extracurriculars. So there's usually so much a student is doing they don't even put on their list, because they haven't, you know, talked to a former admissions officer and realized that that counts as an extracurricular.
And this.
So something really important for that, which a lot of students don't think about, is forming a great relationship with your guidance counselor. Go in, pop in, say hi, tell them what you're doing so that when they're writing that letter, they're not writing a standard letter that they write for all students.
All right, we got a great episode ahead for y'all. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Hi, Kat. How are you today?
Hello, hello. I am doing well, thank you. Although it is raining in England as per usual, unfortunately.
Oh, a rainy day. I love it. Sounds like the perfect day for an interview. I know we have a lot to chat through today, but before we start, can you briefly introduce yourself, share a little bit about your background with our listeners?
I am from the UK, as those of you with ears might have noticed at this point, but I moved to the US when I was 18 to attend NYU. So that is where I did my undergraduate studies. And then I started a career in finance, actually. So I worked at Morgan Stanley, worked with a lot of business students at Morgan Stanley. Then I became the assistant director of admissions for NYU for a couple of years, which was so, so much fun and where I got the majority of my admissions experience. Then I went off and started my own venture capital firm. So I've been working on that with a colleague that I actually met at NYU back in the day as undergrads, who was at the Stern School of Business. And the two of us have been working on that company for the past few years. And I forgot to mention at NYU, I actually double majored in mathematics and philosophy. And now I'm working with Ingenious and I'm so, so enjoying it. It's been a wonderful application cycle so far.
Amazing. So today we'll be discussing how you got one of your students, who we'll call Maggie for privacy reasons, into Columbia University during the early decision round, which is such an impressive accomplishment. So congratulations to her and your team. And today is truly our lucky day because you'll be letting us into all the strategy that went into building her profile and et cetera. But to start and really set the scene here, can you describe for us the type of student Maggie is so we can get a sense of who she is and what her profile looked like?
Maggie was a fun case because not the typical physics applicant. She was from a public high school in New Jersey, you know, fantastic GPA of a 4.46, a weighted GPA, fantastic SAT score of a 1550. But actually, when we began our work together, she was at about a 1450. So we put a lot of time into helping her take a diagnostic test with Ingenious, which is where you essentially take a fake SAT with us to estimate time conditions and have a practice. And then we spent a lot of time helping her with SAT prep as well to get her up to that amazing 1550 score. And she's hooked sort of two rounds of fours when it came to her APs. So two fours on her APs. We knew she was interested more on the STEM side, but at first she wasn't so sure. So she was considering physics, engineering programs, mathematics, and also architecture for a period of time as well, which is a whole different process just because sometimes architecture programs do require an additional portfolio. So she really wasn't quite sure what she wanted to study, and that made her quite an interesting applicant. And she's also not your typical woman in STEM. You know, she does loads of different extracurriculars, and that sort of made her stand out to me, I think, as a candidate.
Fantastic. And what were some initial challenges and gaps you saw as you were looking through her profile and working on her strategy report?
She had a lot of interests, as I just mentioned, and that meant that she was very, very unclear on the major she wanted to apply to. And given that she joined us in 11th grade, you really do want to be narrowing down your major of choice at that time, because that shapes the work that we do together at Ingenious. So if you say to me, I want to apply for business, I'm going to help you in a very different way than I am if you say to me, I want to apply for physics, which is what Maggie ended up applying for. So in terms of rough spots we had to work out, we had to narrow down a major of choice pretty quickly, but of course didn't want to rush that process because it's very important that Maggie is excited to apply to a particular major and it's exactly what she wants to be doing. So that took a lot of research on our part and a lot of fun conversations with her to sort of narrow down through questions about, you know, geography, subject matter, future careers, where we could get that major from. She also had a lot of extracurricular activities, as I mentioned, which is fantastic. They spanned her many, many interests. The trouble with that is that disconnected activities can appear as a weakness to universities if you don't sort of harness them in the right way and connect them all together when you type them all out onto the common application. We put a lot of work into seeing if she could get some leadership roles within her extracurriculars, because I noticed that leadership was missing from her profile. And we also spent a lot of time getting some more STEM-based activities in there and also some volunteering. But she did, you know, attend a competitive school, meaning that she also needed to stand out from her peers when she was applying. So if we're seeing loads of strong applicants from one school, we knew that we needed her to stand out to her top choices. And she was also aiming for very top-ranked US universities. So she very much needed our guidance there on how to craft the perfect supplemental essays for those and also create a bit more of a balance so that she had some really, really good options in there.
Perfect. So disconnected activities is actually a topic I get quite a lot of questions around from our listeners. So how did you work with Maggie to connect all those activities to create a cohesive profile?
So at first, we sort of worked a lot on our extracurricular enhancement plan. We call it here at Ingenious, which is where we discuss over about an hour with the student, basically every extracurricular that they've ever done and that they're really, really passionate about. I always like to have a very diverse extracurricular profile. Ingenious has, you know, a lot of support when it comes to making sure we tick lots of boxes. It's really important to have major representation on that. So if you're applying to film studies, for example, but all of your extracurriculars are neuroscience, I'm going to wonder why you're applying to film studies and think, you know, is this person really passionate about that major? Instead, with Maggie, what we spent a lot of time on is making sure we covered physics once she determined that that was her major interest, really describing the physics club, also adding an element of uniqueness. So that came with her sports background that also showed her teamwork ability. That came with her singing background, which also showcased her leadership. She also spent a lot of time teaching herself guitar in her free time and drawing and things like that. And I think what a lot of students don't realize is that those are extracurriculars. So there's usually so much a student is doing, they don't even put on their list because they haven't, you know, talked to a former admissions officer and realized that that counts as an extracurricular. So it's all about kind of hearing exactly what they've spent all their time doing and then picking out, making sure we're covering those three buckets of major, academics, uniqueness, fun, creative, free time, and also volunteering. And we put it all together on a list. And there we start sort of looking for trends. She's a physics applicant, but she does a lot of music, but she does a lot of sport. Those can be used to enhance her leadership profiles. You see where I'm going with this. So you can kind of pick the skills that are in her application. So this goes for other students as well. You're doing loads of stuff. That's amazing. Admissions officers love that. It's much easier than getting a student who doesn't want to do a lot of stuff. So that's great. And then you go through and you think, okay, that's leadership related. That's team building work, communication skills that you learned from debate. And all of those skills are useful to any major. So it's just about using them in the context of STEM or of your engineering project. You know, I took the lead of my engineering project at school after I was the lead in debate. Things like that. So it is very, very possible to connect all those things together. I think it's harder when you're trying to do it by yourself because you don't really know how to talk about yourself. So that's where we step in and say, okay, here are the facts. Here's what we're going to do with it.
Perfect. I really love how you identified, as you said, the trends within her extracurriculars and laid out a roadmap of how she can enhance those activities. Like you mentioned, using her current involvement in music and sports to enhance her leadership skills, right? And then you took all those activities to create this one connecting theme, which we call the application persona. And I personally think Maggie's persona is so unique, and I'd love to read it out for our listeners. So her persona is a top woman in physics who couples her creativity with her strong STEM ability to come up with unique ways to have a positive impact on the world around her. I love that. Can you walk us through a bit deeper, not only how you created that persona for Maggie, but also how you incorporated this common thread throughout all of her application materials?
Every application persona at Ingenious has to be entirely unique to that student. So you can't just have a woman in STEM applying for physics, because that's not specific. I'm sure we have other women in STEM on board that are applying for physics, right? Although adding the woman notion is a great start, because Maggie wanted to talk a lot about her experiences as a woman in STEM in her essays. So that's why we weaved that in there. But it's really important to highlight why the student is unique. So the first part of the application persona, which is a top woman in physics. So that was the first thing we needed to incorporate. So she's got to have those academics for physics, right? Like, it's got to be shown that she's choosing challenging STEM courses in her school if they are offered. Physics, preferably, of course, if it's offered. We've got to take a look at her extracurriculars. So we strongly encouraged her to partake in the Physics Olympiad, which she did. And we wrote an essay about the Physics Olympiad. Her personal statement strongly covered her experience in the Physics Olympiad. That was a great way to cover, you know, top woman in physics. And then what we did in the extracurriculars is we enhanced the rest of the application persona, which is her creativity with her strong STEM ability. So that was our way to say, okay, yes, we've covered the Physics Olympiad. We're also going to put that in the extracurriculars, but this is where we get to show her uniqueness as an applicant. Not every physics student has done all these amazing music opportunities, been invited to sing at certain locations, doing all this fundraising, all of this sport. So that's where we use those little description boxes of about 150 characters on the common application to really go for it and show that unusual character. And then we also do that in the supplemental essays as well. Maggie was very much into making a positive impact on the world around her. And as a result, we wanted to reflect that as well. So we encouraged her to get into volunteering. So we got her volunteer tutoring opportunities in physics and mathematics. That connected not only to the physics aspect, but also the positive impact aspect. And then we talked about those experiences in her supplemental essays as well. So it's all about finding that thread and linking it through every section of the application.
And you mentioned that she was aiming for really competitive schools. So what do you think was the key thing that helped her stand out?
I always think the best way to stand out is through your supplemental essay. So you can have a wonderful personal statement. Of course, every single student is going to stand out in that regard, because every personal statement is entirely unique. But what we get when we read supplemental essays is a lot of generality. So we may get that they're trying to, you know, talk about how they want to make the world a better place. They want to study in the library. These are all very general statements a student can make. And we get 70% of supplemental essays are a bit like that. And I think it's because students are told by people that colleges want to hear that they want to make the world a better place, and all these grand terms that they want to fix world hunger. And I think what makes a student stand out is get specific about what you actually are passionate about and what you can actually achieve as a college student. So as a result, the supplementals are where you get to say, because I worked for this organization, I did this. So she was able to say, through volunteering, by teaching math students online for free, I would also love to get involved in this particular club that does exactly that at the university. I don't just want to study at the library and meet fellow peers. I want to study at X library name where I can meet so-and-so who, you know, is a professor there, and things like that. So supplemental essays are the best place to stand out. And that's why we spend so much time on them here at Ingenious.
Perfect. I love that. I think your advice about staying away from generalities and supplementals is such a great one. And I know in order to write essays that really show admissions officers why their specific school is a great fit, there's a lot of research involved, right? Even before a student starts writing. So what was that process like with Maggie? Can you walk us through how you helped her with the research and brainstorming process to really write a standout supplemental essay?
It can seem overwhelming when you look at it as a whole piece. So what I typically do is assign students certain little homework projects. So I'll say, can you spend 10 minutes per school? And we'll give, you know, 6 schools that week, where they can go through and give me certain answers to certain questions. So what is the school's mission statement? What size is the student body? Where is the school? What is one club at the school that you'd be excited to join? What is one class within the major you're thinking of that you'd like to take? Can you name a professor in that subject as well? Tell me what research they're doing, and would you like to be doing that research as well? By answering highly specific questions, it can take 10 to 15 minutes to just put together an excellent list of specific information. And then you spend that time writing that out in 4 sentences and connecting yourself to it, because you've already chosen, oh, that professor sounded interesting to me. So it already connects to you. That produces an entirely unique supplemental essay. But I think the best place to start is going on that website for 10 minutes and looking first at the thesis statement. Because as you mentioned, personality fit is really important.
Perfect. And what about for her personal statement? I know we've preached several times on our podcast that there needs to be two different mindsets almost for supplemental and personal statement writing. So what was your strategy for Maggie's personal statement?
What I wanted to cover in the personal statement was her major. Because Maggie ended up choosing a major later on in the game with our support, I knew that we had to spend a lot of time working on the personal statement, making sure it matched that major. Because of course, one disadvantage of choosing a major late in the game is that you haven't spent 2 to 3 years designing your extracurriculars to fit that major. But Maggie had participated in the Physics Olympiad. So because she was applying for physics, that was a great fit. So I thought, let's spend the personal statement really, really highlighting that physics passion, that STEM passion, instead of discussing any other topics, because those other topics were covered extensively in the extracurriculars and can also be explored in the supplemental. So I knew I wanted her to write the personal statement about physics in some form. She started talking to her graduate coach and myself about the Physics Olympiad and talking through the challenges that her team faced, what she was assigned as part of the challenge, you know, the part of the project that she led, how they did. And it was a fantastic story. It was so much fun. And she didn't realize that it would be something she could write about, because I think some students think personal statements have to be very serious, very profound, very deep, you know, come up with some sort of philosophical solution to a major problem. But instead, this funny story about balloons and physics was perfect. So that's how we kind of got it out of her without her realizing that was, you know, a wonderful topic idea. And then she did a first draft for us for homework, and we worked on it. I think we went through about 4 or 5 drafts after that, and it got really, really good by the end. And it showed that she was funny, it showed that she was creative, and of course, a very, very proficient physicist as well.
I love that. And I'm noticing that for really standout essays, especially personal statements, it's those unique anecdotes that help them stand out. I mean, I had a recent episode where one of our graduate coaches shared that a student wrote about toilets, and that was a great personal statement that helped them stand out. So I'm curious, what is your best tip or best piece of advice when it comes to personal essays?
Anytime you have the instinct to write "since the dawn of time," or "the Oxford Dictionary defines physics," please, please, we in admissions strongly ask you to not do that. Open with the punchy line that kind of summarizes what you're about to talk about. Remember that we're reading thousands of these every application cycle. So we don't want to see at the beginning of every essay the same thing, you know, "since the dawn of time." We want to see, "you wouldn't believe how a balloon can protect an egg," right? I don't know what that means. I'm so curious to find out what that means. Another approach I always encourage is the sandwich method. That is just simply telling me exactly what you're going to say, having the material in the middle, and then saying again exactly what you said at the end. So the introduction and the conclusion are not similar, of course, but you give me a clue as to what you're going to talk about. And then at the end, you tell me again what you've talked about. That's a very college way of writing an essay. That's something that you'll learn a lot once you get to college. So to have a sort of heads up on writing a coherent piece instead of just sort of word vomiting, the classic approach kind of throughout the whole thing, is really, really helpful. One of the best essays I ever read at NYU was about a girl's 3 pet rats. One of them was about a Rubik's Cube and teaching yourself how to get that done in under 5 minutes. These are really special, unique topics that no student sort of instinctively thinks they can write about. So write about something you're genuinely passionate about, and don't try and sort of say, "no, I'm really, really passionate about this thing I think you want me to say." Pick something really fun, like your rats.
Fantastic. And now in general, I get a lot of questions from listeners who are like, "I just found your podcast and I feel like I'm so behind. You know, I'm going into my senior year next year and I'm just in full-blown panic." And I feel for them, right? Because as you know, there's so much that goes into college applications. I mean, we always say start early, but obviously we can't turn back time. So for these students, especially our STEM students who may see parts of themselves in Maggie, what do you think should be their first step in enhancing their candidacy?
First instance is the personal statement. So if you're worrying at the last minute, "oh gosh, I'm applying for mechanical engineering and I'm looking at my extracurriculars having listened to this podcast and I don't have any mechanical engineering extracurriculars," maybe talk a little bit about that in your personal statement. You know, what are you hoping to do? What has inspired you to study mechanical engineering? So not necessarily, "I've already done this," but "what are you going to do in college?" So I would really like to start a startup that builds a water irrigation device for certain communities to access free in clean drinking water. So think about things that you're passionate about and talk about why you would like to do those. And then what you do after that is you build on those heavily in the supplemental. So if you're a student that's left some things to the last minute, you want to make sure your personal statement and supplemental match up. This wasn't necessarily the case with Maggie because we had a little bit of time. So we had, you know, physics covered in the personal statement and then a bit more fun with the supplementals. But if it's a last minute, you want to combine the two. You want to strongly emphasize that STEM presence that you haven't displayed in your extracurriculars. So if you talk about a startup with a water irrigation system in your personal statement, you talk about a professor who's working on really similar research to that in the mechanical engineering lab, and then talk about how you want to help him on that research and you'd attend this class to help you build that startup. You'd also pursue a minor in entrepreneurship that the school offers because you want to learn how to finance your startup. So you use the personal statement to set a base that you haven't unfortunately set in your extracurriculars, and then you use the supplementals to build on that for that school.
Perfect. And I actually have a question from a listener here that kind of goes along with what you just said. And I'm really curious what you think. They asked, if I really want to apply as a computer science major, but don't have many things on my resume that supports computer science, is it strategic to apply as a different major, even if I'm not necessarily as passionate about it, but is more aligned with the classes I've taken and or projects I've done? I'm realizing how competitive computer science is after listening to your podcast, and I'm wondering if I should go a different route. Really interesting question. What is your take on this, Kat?
A lot of students want to apply to computer science and business, and we talk about why that is. And often the reason that they're approaching those majors is first of all, because they are a bit intimidated by researching anything else. They don't really know what options are out there for them. And also because they've been told, whether it be by a family member or something like that, that those are the only majors that will get you a job, or they'll give you the highest chance of getting a job, which I can absolutely assure you is not the case. I've worked in finance for most of my career. I didn't study business. There are loads of examples like that where students have, you know, taken to engineering late in the game. There are loads of options. Hacking programs where for a year you become a software engineer in just 1 year, things like that. So my advice to a student is pick the major that is most likely to get you into your dream school and help you build your future resume. So if that's studying physics at Harvard, then that's why I think strategically it's important to go with a non-engineering major. Having said that, I also work with a lot of students who say, business has been my dream. I have 3 startup companies. Then of course you should be applying for business because that's your passion. But if you're coming to me saying, I don't know, business, because my dad told me that that's the only way I'll get a job, that's when I would strongly encourage something else that's a bit more represented in your profile. Perhaps you're actually really passionate about psychology. Perhaps communications is a better fit for you because you're passionate about marketing and branding. With computer science students, do you want to learn to code, which you can do anyway in separate programs? Or do you have this profile where you're designing your own app and you've actually sold it on the app store when you were in 10th grade? That's the difference between I would encourage you to do something else and okay, we're really going to go for computer science. And also think about rankings. Most competitive majors in the world, computer science, second, usually business, depends on the year. So think about that. If I really care about ranking, or I really want to be in New York, and I really want to be at NYU or Columbia, think strategically in order to make sure you get a great experience at those dream schools.
Perfect. And bringing it back to Maggie and your work with her, if you could go back in time, is there something you wish Maggie had done when she was younger?
If I could go back in time and work with her from 9th or 10th instead of 11th, I would have made that STEM presence way more magnified. It's much harder to apply to a STEM program if you have wonderful other extracurriculars, but nothing to do with STEM whatsoever. That becomes much harder. I would have encouraged her to found her own club that covered STEM. So if your school already has a STEM club, perhaps start a biochemistry club specifically, because that's what you want to study. Oh, there's already a biochemistry club. Maybe you start a nitrogen ice cream making club, right? That incorporates a lot of principles from biochemistry. It's a great way to sort of showcase a specific passion for a major without just being a member of the STEM club. Because guess what? A lot of students are the member of the STEM club. So it's great if you end up as president, but there's only one president every year. Odds are not always ideal. So instead, do something on your own. And I would have loved if Maggie could get involved with physics a little bit earlier.
And looking back, what do you think it was that got her into Columbia? Are there any specific callouts you feel that tipped her application towards the admitted pile?
We nailed that strong test score. We nailed that all-A's transcript. We wrote a great personal statement that aligned with a major. A lot of students to Columbia are going to be doing just that, especially if they have the foresight to sort of work with people and make sure they're achieving those 3 things, right? Then it becomes a case of they can't admit everybody with a 1550 SAT. So what can we do? And that's where the supplementals come in. And the reason for that, it's not not just about showing uniqueness, which we spent a lot of time on. It's also about connecting yourself to Columbia directly. So when students say to me, I know I want to be in New York, so I'm going to apply to Columbia, or I know I want to be in New York, so I'm going to apply to NYU, that's not a good enough reason. And the reason for that is that there are at least 9 universities I could name very, very quickly off the top of my head in Manhattan. That's just Manhattan. So already we're not getting specific enough. So when we're tying to Columbia specifically, go on a tour. If you can't go on a tour, perhaps go on a virtual tour of the website. Due to COVID, most universities have those now. So you're already getting a feel. I would love to take my class at the Lubin Auditorium that I saw on the tour. And you're already connecting me to your university. I can't separate the two anymore. One of my biggest tips when it comes to supplementals is to go through every sentence and see if you can replace that college that you're mentioning there. So I want to go to Columbia because, if you can replace any other college in that sentence, it's a waste of a sentence. It's a waste of the word count. I want to go to Columbia because it's in New York, waste of a sentence, because I can replace that with Fordham. I can replace that with NYU. But instead, because it's in an area of New York that houses this specific institute that I would love to work at, that's right by on 165th Street. Already, that's a really good sentence. My advice is always to just go through sentence by sentence and think, could this apply to any other college? Another sort of key component for Maggie's application, which is especially important when you're applying to a top school, is crafting the perfect letter of recommendation. And that can usually come from a teacher. There's almost always one required from your guidance counselor. So something really important for that, which a lot of students don't think about, is forming a great relationship with your guidance counselor. Go in, pop in, say hi, tell them what you're doing, so that when they're writing that letter, they're not writing a standard letter that they write for all students. But if you're that student that's able to get that opening sentence, so-and-so, this is the best physics student I've ever seen, then that's really, really strong to an admissions officer. We're getting a lot of green flags right off the bat. With letters of recommendation, it's vital to make sure that the recommenders know you well. Go to their office hours, get some help with that essay. So it's about picking somebody that matches the subject and getting to know them a little bit. I would imagine students might respond to that, okay, I'm in 11th grade, I haven't done that. So how do I build that rapport? A great way is to write yourself not a letter of recommendation, but a list of bullet points that you would love to have included in a letter of recommendation. So maybe you're asking your math teacher because you're applying to computer science. You don't know that teacher really well. That's not really the dynamic that you've created in class. You haven't needed a lot of help. You haven't gone to office hours. But perhaps you can write that teacher a list saying, I'm captain of the netball team. I am a participant in the plays. So let that teacher know what you're about. So when they're writing that letter, it gives that impression that they know you really, really well and can therefore sort of speak to what you're like as a student. And remind that teacher as well what grades you've been getting in that class. Tell them how passionate you are about physics. Tell them you've been reading this particular book in physics. Really show them what you're about if you haven't had the chance to get to know them well. Maggie was quite an active participant in her classes, and as a result, that gave us quite a few options when it came to picking her recommenders. Then my advice to her was not necessarily pick as strategically as she was thinking. So, oh, do I have to ask, you know, my physics teacher because I'm applying to physics? It became more of a case of, okay, you could ask your physics teacher, but let's have a look at your math teacher that you keep mentioning is so much fun and you really get on and you always go to her office hours. Maybe that's the person that should be writing your letter, even though you're not applying for math, because math is related to physics, and also because it's going to then be an even stronger essay. So you always want to go by who knows you best and who will write the best letter for you, rather than, okay, I'm applying to X, so I have to ask Y.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Kat. Just have one final question here for you to wrap up this interview. If you could give one key piece of advice to parents and students, and this can be about anything college applications, what would that be?
The advice I would give to any student listening to this podcast and any parent as well, start prepping early for the college admissions process. And that is not because it can't be done at the last minute, but the reason I advise students to prep early is because the process becomes so much smoother and so much more fun and so much more relaxing if you 6 months in advance are thinking about your personal statement rather than the day before the deadline. It's so easy to let college admissions sneak up on you because, of course, it's this big future question. You know, I'm going to leave high school and go to college, but right now I have a chemistry test tomorrow. So it's really easy to let it sneak up on you. you, and you're almost encouraged to let it sneak up on you because you have so many other people trying to get your attention. You know, your math teacher needs homework, your drama teacher needs you for the play. But the process becomes so much less stressful when you go into it knowing exactly what to expect. There is definitely a rubric to these things that we teach our students. We go into the process with them when 12th grade hits, completely prepared already with a list of activities that we've been tracking since 9th grade with a student and already writing those descriptions. So that's much less work. We've already been building out a club they founded 2 years ago, an academic prize they entered for, a paper writing competition we found for them. So already we're building out a really strong application. And we hit 12th grade and we're almost done. And then we have to worry about writing essays. It's all about prepping for the SAT in advance, not taking it once at the last minute. It's all about having personal statement ideas the summer before, which makes the process a lot of fun. Avoid leaving things to the last minute. And my other piece of advice I give to all students and parents is avoid generality. A lot of students, as I mentioned earlier, write broad-reaching statements about how in college they want to develop leadership qualities without saying what those qualities are. They want to change the world. They want to solve world hunger instead of, you know, I want to work for this specific nonprofit working towards solving world hunger. They write a lot about what admissions officers in their mind want to hear, but I can assure you that is not the case. So get specific, write about what you really want to write about, and I promise it will showcase in your application.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And if you would like to speak with one of our experts, you can set up a complimentary strategy call with one of our enrollment counselors by following the link in our episode description. And for more information and access to additional resources, you can register for our webinars, which is also linked in the episode description. If you have any questions or would like to request a topic for a future episode, you can email me directly at noelle.kim@ingeniousprep.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of Inside the Admissions Office. And don't forget to follow the podcast so you're notified every time a new episode is available. That's all for now, and I hope you'll join me next time as we continue our journey inside the admissions office.